Last week when Scott Craven was on the program, our wildlife ecologist, someone called and asked a question about bats. And I mentioned that we were going to have a guest on the program this week to talk about bats. And his immediate reaction was, oh, Dave Riddell? And I said, yeah, yes, Dave Riddell is going to be with us. And here he is right in front of me. He is a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Great to have him here to talk about the bats we have in the state and about some of the issues connected with them. There's certainly disease questions that have come up. And we probably had bats in the news a lot more in the last year or so than in years previous because of some of the real problems that are associated with them, at least in some parts of the country now. Questions about bats? I hope you'll. Are you a bat fan? Would you prefer you to never see one again? Do you do anything to attract and support bats? Those are some questions or comments you might have. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can also email us or send a comment to our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Dave Riddell, welcome.
Oh, hello, Larry. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us again. It's been a
couple months. Yeah, 3-4. I don't remember.
It's
been busy.
It's been more than a couple months. Anyway, it's been more than that. And I tell you what, it's been long enough. I think we ought to review some things and let's talk about the bat. What species? What types of bats do we have here in Wisconsin now?
Well, we've got four cave bat species that hibernate here in the state, and we also have three migratory species, tree bats, as we usually call them. They more solitary and roost in trees, migrate south during winter. They don't hibernate here in the state.
So seven total.
Yes, possibly eight or nine if we have the federal endangered Indiana bat or possibly the evening bat. We'll know soon after we analyze the data.
What role do bats play in our economy? Actually, I said role, but roles is probably more like it.
Yes. Well, they've got a couple of roles important in that they are insect eaters, insectivorous bats, and they eat a lot of insects, very high metabolism where they can eat over 1,000 insects per hour. And they've got, I think the last time I was here, I just said they were very important for agricultural and forestry practices, but I didn't give you a number. Now we've got a recent article out that gave us an actual economic impact of our bats in the state as well as nationwide. We've got, they've done a study on the amount of insects and crop pests that they eat. Very important to agriculture, and nationwide, they are responsible for up to $22 billion all the way to $54 billion. Mm. Here in Wisconsin, with our large agricultural practices, we've got anywhere from $658 million all the way up to $1.5 billion. That would be the amount of money likely spent on pesticides once the bats are gone.
Oh, man. And are they also pollinators?
Not here in the state. Our only pollinators are in far southwest United States. We've got a few and possibly one in the Florida Keys.
Well, I know many people have built bat houses and tried to get bats to their areas because they're fun to see, but also for mosquito control because they eat a heck of a lot of mosquitoes.
Yes, that's one of the reasons a lot of people like bats is the amount of mosquitoes they eat. Like I said, that's not all they eat, but they do eat mosquitoes, and that can spread West Nile virus, so they're doing a service for us there.
And maybe before we go to the phones, one more question, and that has to do with white nose syndrome. How far across the country has the white nose syndrome progressed?
It's spreading fast, and I believe they keep adding new states. I think we have 14 or 18 states and three Canadian provinces now. Closest north is in Ontario, right near the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, about 90 miles from there. So about 100 and some miles from our northern border, well within the range of dispersal distance for our most common bat, little brown.
And the explain that disease for us. Tell us.
Well, it came and was first detected in 2007 in Albany, New York. Biologists were seeing some white on bats. Since then, we've identified it as a new species, Geomyces destructens. Probably brought over from Europe. They've got it there by a recreational tourist or caver on their clothing or gear, and has since spread to multiple states and multiple species.
And it can be devastating to a bat population.
Extremely devastating, because our bats hibernate. There's only so many hibernation spots that they can use, and they all congregate in a single location. And with the disease, we can lose anywhere from 75 to 100% of the population in a single year.
Hmm. Mike in La Crosse has a comment or question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Dave and Larry. Happy to be on the air. I've been bat-proofing homes in Wisconsin for about 30 years. This year we are not, well, in the last couple of years we have not been doing maternity colonies. And this prompted some of the customers to ask us this question, so I wrote it down the way they wanted it. What prompted the DNR to increase protection on bats, and how will this help us here in Wisconsin in the future?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hello, Mike. Well, great question. We've since listed our four cave bats as threatened species. That's because of the dramatic loss of bats throughout the East and it being spreading here, so they are threatened. We have since assessed the situation. One of the few things we can do to try and save our bats is to prevent maternity colonies where they congregate. That's where the young are born. And if we can protect every one of those bats from getting excluded and the young trapped inside, then we can save enough bats, hopefully, for a recovery effort. So every bat we feel is important enough to save at this point because of the devastating nature of the disease. That's basically the impetus for putting those control measures in place. We still allow a few. There's a broad incidental take permit, because they're listed, that allows homeowners to, we don't allow exclusion between June 1st and August 15th to protect the young. But if there's a few exceptions to that, where it would be hospitals, daycare centers, and I believe restaurants, that may be a health issue. And if bats get in your living space rather than your attic, then if you can't get them outside, or if you are concerned someone may have been bitten that was sleeping, if it's a health concern, we've got Center for Disease Control recommendations on how to deal with that, where you can actually collect the bats for rabies testing.
Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. Thank you, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, as you mentioned a few minutes back, the economic value, just the economic value alone of bats in this state is how much?
$658 million to $1.5 billion per year.
Yeah, and that's in what we would be spending on pesticides to control the insects that the bats eat.
Right. Right now, they're doing that service for free.
Yeah. That's right. Mike, thank you. That's a good question, and thanks for calling. Vivian in Green Bay, we're on to you. Hi, Viv.
Hi. I have a couple of comments and then a question. University Place on the Wisconsin Channel earlier this week had an hour-long lecture on white-nose syndrome in bats. I don't know who the lecturer was, but since people can pick these things up on the Internet quite easily, someone may want to refer to that. It was extremely informative. I think I've met Paul on NRF field trips, National Resources Foundation. I would encourage anyone to get involved in those field trips. They're extremely informative and at little or no cost. The wind turbines is another thing that education needs to go out about. And I think bat conservation, this whole group that's working in the state is doing a great job of educating people. There was a news article in the Green Bay Press Gazette in May about the threat to bats through turbines and the white nose syndrome. They did quote some numbers about bat mortality, but they didn't mention that bats have one offspring a year, and which I think is a key component when you're talking about mortality. You need to talk about replacement, too. Then, finally, I was in Antigo last Saturday. Stopped at a restaurant for a bite to eat. There was a sign for someone who was doing bat removal. Excuse me. Is the state, now that they're trying to protect our bats, is there a coordination of information between that type of business or the caller earlier who does bat proofing? Is there some sort of structure set in place so they can communicate to you?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, let me try and remember all of these pieces. First off, the lecture you were referring to was David Bleart from USGS, National Wildlife Health Center. And yes, he's a great speaker and always presents a large amount of information, easy to understand. Yes, I haven't seen that yet, but I would recommend it to anyone. Bats in...
Well, bat coordination, efforts on coordinating activities among those who may remove bats or exclude them.
Right. Well, there are a variety of places in the state of Wisconsin. You can probably Google bat removal Wisconsin. And I would recommend sticking only with someone that specializes in bats. There's some certain things that need to be done properly if you're going to successfully exclude them. Some of the generalist pest control operators don't necessarily know all the details, so I would suggest sticking with someone who specializes in bats.
And with that, we'll take a quick break and ponder those other points some more. Our guest today, Dave Riddell, bat ecologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Getting an update on Wisconsin's bat population here in the next half hour. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dave Riddell. Dave's the bat ecologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us talk@wpr.org or shoot a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we did have a question on the Facebook page I wanted to bring up, and that has to do with grape jelly. Marcia says we have a dish filled with grape jelly for the Orioles, and every morning it's empty. I think I might be providing bats a sweet midnight snack. What do you think?
Well, I would really, really be surprised if it was bats. I think that would be something that would make world news. I doubt it would be bats. More likely, if I had to guess, it would be a flying squirrel if it's at night. Possibly some rodents crawling up the tree and eating it. Maybe daytime squirrels if they're active around sunset. Really would doubt it's bats.
And a caller asks for more information on why and how wind turbines are so dangerous to bats.
Well, originally we thought maybe birds would be the fatally affected animals flying through the wind farms. These large turbines can be as high as 400 feet, and rotor diameter is bigger than a 747 jet. So these are large structures on the landscape, and when they started hitting bats, pretty much every bat biologist was very surprised because they can detect things with their echolocation as fine as a human hair. So giant turbines on the landscape were a big surprise. Some are actually hitting the turbine blades themselves. Others are getting caught in the pressure drop behind it where it creates a bends-like for divers situation. One of the hypotheses that's probably gaining interest is the roost attraction hypotheses. Most of these fatalities occur during fall migration, And bats, as we know, mate in the fall. And some of our tree bats, which are most affected, likely pick the tallest tree in the area in hopes of also attracting a female to the area, and bringing them as an attraction to the turbines may increase mortality.
Don in Warren, Wisconsin, has a comment or question. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
Comment and a question. My son is a longtime spelunker, and they go to an island off Puerto Rico. It's like Swiss cheese. It's about 20 square miles. In the 1880s, they mined millions of tons of black guano, and in order to dry it so they could ship it, they cut all the trees off. Now there are no bats, no trees, and billions of mosquitoes. But how many mosquitoes it would have taken to make a pound of bat guano? But the question is then, is there anybody been successful in artificial bat roost systems?
Okay. Well, thanks for your question and comment. Yes, bat guano is a prized fertilizer for gardeners, and it has been mined in the south. Our hibernacula do not produce large amounts of guano because they use them for winter hibernation, and they're not feeding for up to 7 months. Whereas in the south, they can use them during the summer where they're warm enough and large amounts of guano collect. Artificial roosts, we know for summertime, bat houses, bat condos, all the likes are very successful at attracting bats. You may be interested in putting one up at your house to help with the mosquito issue. They've also created cement structures for some bat roosts that we don't have here in Wisconsin, but also have been successful. Typically, in terms of artificial roosts, abandoned mines on the landscape, which Wisconsin has quite a few with our mining history of lead and zinc and iron, those abandoned mines are great artificial, I guess you could say, roost for bats. We've got mm-hmm. some successful stuff, and you may want to look into a bat roost for your summer.
Yep. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Don. And Rick in Waukesha, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Dave and Larry. At my house, I have by my front door, I have a brick wall, and I have bats that come up under the wall by the front door and hang there all night. And my problem is when my teenagers come home at night, the bats fly out at them and scare them, and we're concerned about that. And I tried putting, like, stapling pieces of plastic up on the soffit under the overhang by the door to discourage the bats, but that hasn't been successful. Is there any way to discourage the bats from hanging around my front door at night?
Well, if it's at night only, it's a night roost, so they wouldn't use it during the day. Basically, they use night roosts during feeding, where they take a break and digest. Your son's coming home at night. I can see, since the bats are very active, they would get chased off their night roost. They're not going to be coming at your son's. Usually when bats fly, it looks maybe like they're swooping, but they're trying to get away. And I wouldn't expect anything dangerous there. To exclude them, it's difficult for a night roost rather than a day roost. Some people have put up very fine mesh bird netting and then provide an alternate roost nearby that they may be able to switch to. Other than that, they like to pick the spots that are best for them. And if it's a night roost, I suspect some bird netting or some sort of screening to cover that access point up would be worth a try.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, you kind of want to keep them close by for the mosquitoes, that's for sure. And a caller doing, actually kind of relating to this, a caller is doing a home remodeling project, but when he found bats nesting in the attic area, he put the project on hold to let them raise their young, He'd like to know if August 15th is an absolutely safe day to resume his work, or what should he watch for to know? And also, do bats only have one litter of young a year?
Okay, thanks for the call. Yes, let's start backwards here. Yes, one litter per year. They will give birth typically in June. Takes 3 to 4 weeks before the young can fly, which is why we pick August 15th as a safe date where the young can already fly and being excluded at that time. They still need to learn to feed from their mothers, so we don't want to exclude them earlier. You could always wait until August 30th. I think that would definitely be safe, but we don't want to limit the exclusion practices of our bat excluders who get a lot of calls then and generally resume exclusion at that time. So I think August 15th is safe.
Mary in Harshaw has a question for you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My husband asked me to call in this question. He says bats are rodents, and what do they do to keep their teeth from growing?
Okay, great question. A lot of people believe they are rodents, but they're a completely different order of mammal known as the Chiroptera, which means hand wing, being the only mammal that can fly. They're nothing like rodents in that their teeth do not grow. They don't have to chew, and actually will not chew their way into your house, so they will only use existing holes. So there's no worry about their teeth growing into their jaws. They've got very specialized teeth for the type of insect that they're eating. And interesting, they don't have their front teeth because they have to echolocate and they don't want the teeth breaking that sound and interfering with it. So it's very interesting dentition, but nope, not rodents and nothing like them.
All right. There you go, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Jenny and Stevens Point, on to you.
Hi, I have a question. I have two early summers in a row now, this year and last year. I've gotten bats in my basement. So I want to say, I want to say it's late May, early June. Two came last year, one I managed to get outside. And then this year I found a dead one in my basement. I think I have them up in my attic because I hear squeaking now and then, and I don't know if they're burying themselves in my insulation, but I kind of just leave them up there. But they've been in my basement. How do they get in there, and how can I prevent them from getting in there?
Okay. I would guess you would have big brown bats if they're there in the winter hibernating. They're the only species we have in Wisconsin that can overwinter in people's human structures. They adjust temperature by moving through the walls and attic to try and adjust the suitable temperature without being able to feed. A lot of big browns will come, I'm not sure the exact route, but they will go down into a basement or cellar to utilize those cool temperatures. It may be that you've got a bat or two that either did not find their way out or got lost on the way out.
Yeah.
It's tough to say, but it's not unusual to have a few bats show up in your basement.
Okay, so they're not coming in from the outside. They possibly be coming in from my upstairs.
Possibly, unless you've got a basement window that's been cracked open. They may, a few males may come in. They don't need the warm temperatures that the females do. So check your bottom windows.
Should I, it's okay that they live up there, or should I thought about plugging up any holes in at nighttime, thinking they're outside. They're, I mean, I don't mind. I mean, unless, is it a problem that they're up there living, do you think?
Depends on your take on whether or not you're completely afraid of them or not. If you plug up holes at night when they're gone, you may trap them inside. If it is a maternity colony, you can't exclude them between June 1st and August 15th because of the young.
Okay.
But if you did want to exclude them, I'd recommend finding a specialist and do it after August 15th. But as far as in an attic, It's probably not going to be a big deal. You may have some guano accumulation that you don't like. If your attic is accessible and is not full of insulation, you could always collect the guano and use it for your garden.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And, oh, John in Rice Lake said that he has photographic proof that it's raccoons that eat his grape jelly that's supposed to be for the Orioles. And I forgot to mention raccoons. I saw one up on my jelly feeder. Was it last year or the year before? So,
oh, there you have it. That's good to know the answer.
They love jelly. Dave in Vilas County, let's turn to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I fish a lot at night up here, and I've been on specifically Iron County Lakes and Price County Lakes, too. And I used to see hundreds of bats from 7 o'clock on, you know, and I'd stay out until midnight, and they'd fly all over by you. I haven't seen but maybe one or two bats all summer so far, so I'm really afraid that they're dying off up here rapidly. I don't know if that's odd, but I go out now at night, and I hear the mosquitoes humming like a electric transformer. They're really thick, and I'm thinking we're losing bats that you guys aren't noticing yet.
Well, we rely on citizen reports such as that to give us a pulse on what the bat population's doing throughout the state. It could be that bats in your area were excluded from a large colony, that bat colony is no longer there. It could be that there was a large die-off. If you do notice anything with dead bats, please report it on our DNR website. And we've got an online form that we're very interested in hearing about, and these observations as well. So thank you for letting us hear about that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I used to see them on like Trude Lake over there in Iron County,
yeah,
and then over on Pike Lake, Round Lake chain in Price County, so that's like a 35-40 mile separation. I had them in my attic, like the gal had mentioned, and I had a fella come out and he put like a screening where he stapled on the top and sides, and that kept the bats out, but they could escape, but they couldn't get back in, and that worked wonderfully. So
yeah, that's a typical exclusion method, and we've done some. We did a very thorough acoustic bat survey throughout the entire state this last summer, and I believe those lakes you mentioned sound like they were on our list. So it'd be interesting to see what species and the relative abundance that we picked up.
Yeah, and an acoustic study. How did you do it? What was going on?
Well, we geared up with the largest crew we've ever had to go out, and we selected lakes and rivers throughout the state because those are the best places to find bats. And with canoes and trolling motors, conducted 8-kilometer-long surveys. We had over 350 in the state. And it was just an amazing effort and will provide us with a lot of information.
Have you got a report available that citizens can take a look at?
We will. It'll be a real large report because it's a
quite
huge, a large study. Effort. We call it the Wisconsin Bat List, so for Bat Atlas. And I would say stay tuned to our website. That'll be up. We're still analyzing the species that we recorded, and we'll write up a very nice report.
All right. Let me know when that happens.
Sure.
We'll be sure to post a link to our Facebook page. Kim in Black Earth, on to you now. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I was looking online by a lady's article done January 7th, 2010. Her name is Sonia Shaw. Her article is called Behind Mass Die-Off, Pesticides Lurk as Culprits. She was basically saying that the regulators grapple with the lethal dangers of pesticides. Scientists are discovering that even seemingly benign low-level exposures to pesticides can affect wild creatures in subtle, unexpected ways, and can even lead to some species being extinct. What have you all monitored in terms of people's use of pesticides in their lawn as well as agriculture, since the culprit are the insects that these bats thrive on?
Right. Well, in terms of bat susceptibility to pesticides, they are most susceptible by feeding on insects that have maybe been exposed but not killed by pesticides, and they accumulate those toxins within their fat stores. So it's generally stored in the fat. And the effect is when they go into hibernation and they burn that fat to survive through the winter, it then provides a concentrated effect and can weaken them and possibly kill them by spring. So as far as what were pesticides are real difficult to pinpoint what the cause and effect is and how much is needed. So there's definitely some things known about bats and pesticides, but I think we're too far away from distinguishing which ones are lethal to bats.
Oh, there we go. Thank you, Kim, for calling. Christina in Glenwood, well, on to you now. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
I have had two bats in my home. In each case, caught them with a fishnet, put them outside, and it was no problem at all. And my question, I have a live on a 50-acre farm with two outbuildings and, of course, a variety of trees. I have three brand-new bat houses. They're made of wood, and I'm wondering, can you describe the procedure to put these up? Should I paint them black? And what's the best location? I'd like to hopefully attract bats to each home.
Mm-hmm. Sure. For your comment, with bats in the house, occasionally people do get them flying around if, you know, air conditioner has a gap in it or an open window or screen door. And just like you said, it's sometimes relatively easy to capture a bat and let it outside safely. Other people wait for it to land and then cover it with a cardboard box or Tupperware container, slide another piece of cardboard behind it and remove it. You should not use bare hands to grab it and remove it outside. If you have to handle it, use a thick leather glove, but the other methods are better. As far as your bat house, location is the key, as well as the design of the bat house. It's got to be well caulked and sealed so there's no airflow. We do recommend painting it a dark color to attract or absorb the sunlight to heat it up. The maternity colonies need high heat, sometimes up to 100 degrees. So location, you should put it to get at least 6 hours of sunlight a day, 8 to 10 feet off the ground. Put them on a side of a building or on a 4x4 post buried in the ground. About 10 feet away from a tree at least. Do not put them on a tree. Very rarely attracts bats to use that site. But go onto our website and check it out. We've got a pamphlet on how to construct bat houses and where to place them.
Mm-hmm. And if you go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we have a place where you can just click and go to Wisconsin's Bat Monitoring Program as well, and that information will be right there.
That'll be on there.
So that's a link at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can just go to that and click on Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program, and it'll take you right there. Thank you so much for calling. Tracy and Nina has a small wood-fenced city yard with no sturdy structures, 15 feet high, to attach a bat house to. Is there anything else she can do in her yards, a small yard? Could you put one up there?
Was that Madison?
Nina.
Nina. Okay. Well, it doesn't have to be 15 feet off the ground. 10 feet is plenty. If you can't put it on the side of a structure that's sturdy, you can buy a 4x4 post, dig a hole 3 feet, 4 feet in the ground, bury it, and attach the bat house to that pole, making sure you get enough sunlight during the day.
There you go. And with that, we are out of time. Dave, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I look forward to another visit.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thanks to the callers who had the questions and interest in bats.
Yep. Dave Riddell, bat ecologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He was with us in the past, and I'm sure he's going to be with us in the future. We'll talk some more with him about bats, certainly. And again, go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can click on to the link to the bat monitoring program. Taking a look ahead to programs, we've got tomorrow at 11, Chad Spade and John Viner are coming by to talk about home improvement and repair. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.